Hi everyone, this is Shantae and welcome to Soul Time. I'm excited you joined us for my show today. I'm really excited about our guest today. You know, I'm excited every single time I have a show because I love who I talk to. So I know every time I say, I'm so excited for who we have on our test, on our show today, and I really am. So today we have Claire Hedin, all the way from the Bay Area of California. So welcome, Claire.
Thank you. Thank you, Shantae. Thank you for having me. This is going to be very fun, I know.
Yes, thank you for being here. I'm so excited. So a little background information. I was participating as a participant in the Energy Medicine, the Sacred Science Head Out. And I was watching it and listening to the different speakers on there, and this woman showed up on my screen, and she had the most amazing voice, and it was mysterious and lovely and eerie, and it touched my soul deeply. And I was like, who is this lady? I've got to look her up. And I looked up her website, and I was like, wow, I wonder if she would be a cool person to get on the show. And I reached out and she said yes, and then we talked and we had a great conversation, and that's why I'm so excited to learn more about Claire and just to explore this whole environment about sound healing and creativity and spiritual activism. I think it's going to be great. So Claire describes herself as a sound healer, a protector of the sacred, and an educator for the creative potential of humanity. And wow. How about we just pause right there? Protector of the sacred and educator of the creative potential of humanity. Just hearing that does things to my cellular structure. And we're going to get into this conversation. So Claire, welcome again.
Thank you, Shantae. It's really great to be invited to sit with those words. Because even though I write the words, there's something else about being invited to really hear them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, gosh, that's quite a large thing to say. Both of those things
yes.
are quite big.
Yes, they are. They are. And I want to know how this work called you. Like, how did you find yourself?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. What do you want to share about your story?
Well, gosh. Where does anything begin?
Right?
Yeah, where does anything begin? So when I trace back the elements of myself that feel like they have always existed, then I'm immediately transported to the forest of my youth.
Mm.
And that is where I recall having a very different experience of time than the one we learn as adults.
Mm.
And also of listening and the sensations of listening when you're using your whole body as a vehicle for connection. Mm. And so I would spend lots of time in the forest. We were very lucky because we lived on this hill, and at the top of this hill, the entrance to the forest, Epping Forest, and it is hundreds and thousands of acres.
Mm.
So I could just roam in this forest. And at that point, I suppose no one worried about safety, you know. And so the only sensations I was kind of tapping into were more to do with the mood of the forest itself, you know, because it's vast and you've got the play of the light and all the different insects and animal creatures and the water in the creeks. And just the sound of the wind as it travels through the forest, and then the occasional horse rider, which I later became.
Mm.
you know, for a while. That lent me a different kind of ambient experience of being alive.
Mm.
And then we were additionally kind of lucky because we used to go as a family to the coast. And in England, the coast is very different from Florida or LA or anywhere else, really. You know, mm-hmm. it's very stony. And it has an intimacy to it that I find is different when I'm at the Pacific here, mm-hmm. California, which is so large. And I know it's one body.
Yes.
They have such different personalities. So there was something about being with that, with the edge there of the sort of stony, sandy beach and then this slightly opaque water and the coldness. It was somehow both cold and warm at the same time. And just being at the edge and then being in the water is a different kind of listening again, this wonderful shingles sound.
Mm. You
know, as the water moves over those tiny pebbles, it's the most incredible sound. And in fact, I, as an adult, I later went back and recorded that sound, the sound of inside the North Sea, for one of my albums called Sacred Water.
Mm.
But I think that's kind of been the big imprint on me, are those two different landscapes. And I never lost that sense of connection to nature as a living sentient being to learn from.
Yeah.
You know, so I always found it hard if I would see people doing something that was environmentally rude, as I might put it, you know, like littering or polluting. And I would do little things, make phone calls, because it felt important, you know, just like if I see someone being cruel to an animal, I can't not say something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sense of responsibility to give voice, to give a human voice to nature's urges and needs and movements, you know, her own musings.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I do with song. You know, it's like I turn that into a form of, a different form of sounding to give a human vehicle to the sentience of nature herself.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. That was interesting that you're saying that because I remember listening to the presentation you did for the Sacred Science and it wasn't about, there were no words, right? There were no, there was nothing that felt structured. It felt just like this blend of sounds that was just coming from the heart, but not just the human heart, but the heart of nature, which is us. So it's like it was both at the same time. And it was something that I felt deep in my bones. And I know my bones, our bones, are our stones. It's our remembrance.
Mm.
And so the sounds that you were bringing forth and the instrument that you were playing, which we'll talk about later, but this instrument you were playing, it was calling to my remembrance. It was speaking to the bones, and my bones are reminding me of my connection that I am nature. So it was really a moving experience for me.
Well, thank you. It's definitely enriching for me to hear that kind of feedback of your experience. It's always an honor to do it.
Yeah.
Like it's never not an honor. It's never not unusual. It's never not enlivening. Like there's something about going deeply in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally like jumping into the ocean, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so instant. Like the second I start singing, I feel the shift.
Mm-hmm.
And and I get that feedback, you know, from people who have experienced that sound coming through me.
Yeah.
And the experience of presence that it compels.
Yeah. You
know, it's like it's automatic.
Yes. Yes.
It kind of blows me away, to be honest. You know?
Yes, yes. Because like it comes from a different place. It doesn't come from the conscious mind. It comes from way within our subconscious, it feels.
I think so. It feels like the sound of our collective body, our sort of body soul.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of movement in it and an attentiveness to detail, even though you might not know that if you were to analyze it. But energetically, there's an intense attention to the detail of the energy itself.
Yes.
That I'm doing. That's kind of what I'm doing when I'm there.
Yes. So tell us, how has that been transformative in your own inner healing work? Like, how has sound been a part of your own healing journey?
Well, it's, gosh, again, where to begin? I'm going to go back one step, which is that I studied music as a very young child. Although I've always been a massive fan of music, when I studied it as a child, I didn't really enjoy it because it felt very stiff. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a very classical kind of training, especially on the piano. So it took a while, and the way I came back around is that I was actually trained as a healer over many years, you know, took different trainings. And then I went to art school, and it was in the holidays in between semesters at art school that I started experimenting with abstract art. And it just turned out that the art pieces I was doing got bigger and bigger, and the space I was in, obviously, you know, had its physical limitations. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of ran out of space. And I was living in San Francisco at the time, and the apartments are obviously, you know, spaces at a premium in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine lent me a guitar, and he's like, well, you know, would you like to borrow one? Because he had like four of them.
Uh-huh.
So I said, sure, that would be fun. And so I borrowed a guitar, and without knowing technically what I was doing, I started writing songs. And those were songs with words. So those were... What I later realized is that I was kind of doing a narrative, and my original way of using music for healing, apart from as a listener, which I used to do a lot growing up, was that I was exploring my psychology. I was exploring my body stories and putting those into songs. And by writing the song and eventually performing the songs, that whole process became very self-revealing, you know. So when I actually first was writing those kinds of songs, it never occurred to me that I would share them out loud to others.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't written as a performance thought. They were written as an exploration process for myself.
Yeah.
So I did that for a long time, and have, I think, about 5 CDs of that kind of material. But you see, there's this part of me that has always been in love with consciousness, and I even did a master's degree in consciousness studies for that reason. And there was this sort of nagging impulse of sort of curiosity for deeper connection with what I call numinous space. And so I just started going more deeply into the abstract realms that happen between and before the words. And that's what I wanted to know. I wanted that relationship. And so, like anyone, you know, I would just find ambient spaces like stairwells or bathrooms, anywhere where the acoustics really, they're what we call wet, you know, they reverberate very
quickly. Yeah.
And, you know, you would sort of get a sound bath doing it. So you had a physicality of immediate responsiveness of the environment, but there's also the physicality of vibrating yourself through singing. And so there was intellectual curiosity, because I've always wanted to understand. I come from an engineering family. You know, so it's like, yeah, how do things work? I love understanding how things work. And I love chatting with the universe to ask those kinds of questions.
Yes.
You know, and anyone can do that. That's the beauty. It's like, mm-hmm, the universe is always available for a good chat.
I love that. Yes, absolutely. Always open, yeah, for a good chat.
That's why going for walks are so good. The Christian mystics used to do this. They used, yes, to go for walks because they would listen to nature, and then they would share with each other afterwards some of the experiences that they had.
Yes.
But, you know, it was a form of prayer. It was considered a form of prayer.
Absolutely. Every morning, or most mornings, I get out on my walk through my neighborhood, and that's my chat. I talk with my ancestors. I talk with, yeah, the birds. I listen. It's just, and I'm always so inspired when I come back. It's like I've had the best conversation ever.
Yeah.
With all of my friends, and I come back feeling like, oh, wow, I've just visited with all my friends. That was an amazing morning walk.
I know. It's lovely. It's lovely. And friends that don't necessarily do that yet, most of my friends do, but yeah, there are some that don't necessarily. And so when they see me leave the front door, you know, of my house, and I'll say hello to the lilies by the front door.
Yes.
And they note it. They don't necessarily say anything, but then they'll be talking with other people. And they go, you know, Claire talks to her lilies. Like, and they're fascinated. You know, then they think it's the coolest thing ever.
Yes. Yes. I know. I was in the garden all weekend because, you know, we don't normally have a freeze here in Florida. So we had a freeze here this winter. And so lots of stuff has died back. And so I was out there just chopping and cutting and replanting. And I bought some heather that I put. And this morning I was like, you know, this heather really feels like it wants to greet everyone that comes up to the house. So I had to put them on either side. They were very specific with where they wanted to be.
Right.
So that every time, you know, we leave the door or we come in, we get to greet the heather. The heather wants to be greeted every time. And so it was really nice. So
that's
I
lovely.
Get that.
That's so lovely.
I get that completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some of the other things I was reading is about, and you've kind of touched on it, but your consciousness for social change.
Mm.
And that you teach at San Francisco State University, creativity and innovation. So I wanted to touch on that a little bit. I wanted you to talk more about whatever really wants to show up about the potentiality of creativity in all of us.
Well, I happen to think that this is the most exciting topic to talk about ever.
Yeah.
To me, that relationship between life and creativity and our evolution, like, it just doesn't get any juicier or more relevant than that. And so, you know, you only have to look outside or even inside to see how much creativity there is going on all the time. Like, everything has been designed by somebody.
Mm.
And there has been thought put into the development of ecology and ecosystems. And whether or not a person thinks that thought belongs to a being called God or goddess, you know, that's not really a debate that I feel the need to go into, because mm-hmm. I think there's lots of different ways to appreciate the design of nature, you know, and the presence of nature.
Yeah.
But obviously the universe is ridiculously creative. Mm. Like, everything, you know, if you believe in the Big Bang theory, for instance, you know, like, everything came from this sort of tiny nothingness. And I love the irony that you find around every question. You know, there's so much inversion and complexity around truth. And yeah. I think that in and of itself is a really good place to start in terms of creativity. It's like, does a person, like anyone who's listening, you know, do you let yourself have contradictory thoughts coexist? Do you let that be okay? You know, or do you feel like you have to resolve it so that it comes down to one?
Yes.
And I personally think it's much sexier to let lots of controversial contradiction coexist. Yes. Because when you let that coexist, then something in there, it sets off a creative tension.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe even the why of why anyone does anything. Are you doing it to resolve it, or are you doing it to deepen your intimacy with it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one, the second, the latter feels much more creative to me, because then you're dancing with the universe. And that, by the way, is how I define an artist, is somebody who dances with the universe, dances with reality.
Yes.
If you're simply seeking to resolve something, then you're just kind of tidying up, and that's a different thing, and there's nothing wrong with it. But it's maybe not the most enticing way to get your soul to come out and play if that's all you do. Like, sometimes, of course, you need to set the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, house cleaning, believe it or not, can be incredibly preparatory for being creative, because it's like, it's a monotonous thing that doesn't require your brain or your mind. And so your body is doing things, but your mind can be dancing. So I guess creativity, I feel like for humans, I feel like our evolution, our individual evolution, is the intrinsic part of our collective evolution and of the planet's evolution. So that can be quite helpful to think about too, just because sometimes we might think, oh, it's a bit self-indulgent, especially if you're British, because we love thinking everything's self-indulgent. It's like, well, it's a bit self-indulgent to focus on myself. We call it navel gazing. You know, it's like, oh, you're just so concerned with yourself, you know, think of others. And it's like, well, gosh, talk about missing the point. You know, if I focus on where I'm less free than I'd like to be, then that's a little bit more freedom that I've added to collective consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, when I have successfully liberated an aspect of myself that has felt trapped.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I would start to answer that question.
Yes. That is just, it's so deep, and it is. It's so juicy. It has so much in it. And to sit back and ponder, and I'm thinking again, because my recent experience with you is through the sound healing, and it's very mysterious. The sound healing, what you just described, is a lot of what I felt within myself that was able to come free. And it's the mystery. It's the honoring of the mystery. So I was looking on your site, and I saw this, and it was really, I was like, well, that's really nice. And so you said, I am part of something mysterious, magical, pragmatic, and very much alive, an actual living system, a community of life.
That's so lovely.
Yes, and you wrote that.
Sometimes people will read things and I'm like, oh, that's so lovely. And they'll go, well, you wrote it.
You wrote it. And I was thinking, wow, it feels like that statement and what you were just talking about is that sacred. When you talk about your protector of the sacred.
Yes.
It's like that is the sacred, that when she says she's a protector of the sacred, I first go to being protectors of the sacred within ourselves by fill in the blank, what we do to protect our sacredness. And then at large. And so, so tell me what is stimulated.
Well, again, the protector of the sacred, I think one of the ways I am quote unquote pragmatically protecting the sacred is by giving it voice.
Mm.
And so whether I'm doing that through voice singing, or through speaking my truth? Because I'll tell you something, when anybody speaks their absolutely genuine truth, not in blame, but just in authentic vulnerability, we are protecting the sacred.
Absolutely.
And that is like, that's why learning how to be confident, and this touches my heart just thinking about this, you know, it takes a long time. It can take a very long time, especially for women in this culture, mm-hmm. to feel like it's okay to have a different opinion or to have an opinion at all, you know, that should be voiced. Like yes. sometimes we sort of disagree with an idea that we're hearing, but maybe because others are agreeing with it, maybe we don't want to rock the boat, or maybe we don't want to stand out. Maybe we're afraid of being rejected.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, with the students, they get afraid of being laughed at. Mm-hmm. They have a different opinion. So, or if they don't understand something. And even that, like to be able to ask somebody, you know, hey, I just heard you say this and I don't really understand it. Could you try saying it again, perhaps in a slightly different way, to see if you can help me get on the same page as you? So this intimacy and communication, I think, is a big part of how we protect the sacred.
Yeah. You know,
there are other ways that are very obvious for how we protect the sacred, like the indigenous peoples are doing with protecting the water. Mm-hmm. They make it very easy for us to hear and see and understand that they're protecting the sacred. Mm-hmm. So there are things like that, you know, and I think they all matter. But yeah. I think just taking the time to listen, you know, how we listen is a way of protecting the sacred, because we invite the sacred forward. Absolutely. You know, when we're patient, when we're inquisitive. Just and then yes. there's really practical things like protecting the sacred by not being wasteful. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very frugal with how I use things. I'm very careful with the things that I own, because I want them to last. And for me, it's a way of respecting that mm-hmm. these materials came from Earth.
Yeah.
So when you see that in everything, when you see Earth in everything, then I think that the sacred begins to, it's like it's humming, and the more we see it in everything, the louder that hum gets, and it gets to resonate through our whole being.
Yeah. Well, that's sometimes what I call for myself being tuned in to planet I, planet Shante, mm-hmm. and planet Earth.
Yes.
There's plenty of things that I can do for planet Earth, but if I'm not doing them for planet Shante, then there's a disconnect.
I agree with you. It's like giving with one hand and taking with the other.
Yeah.
You know, because you are Earth. So your sort of Shante's aspect of Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So why would you not, you know... Pollution, for instance. I think pollution is an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy for us to identify external pollution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know what to look for. But internal pollution
mm-hmm.
is sort of just as sad when we're doing it, you know, and that yes. that shows up in the mental and emotional elements and the physical.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. From the physical perspective, it might be that we're not eating a very good diet.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's sense, you know, if it's emotional, it might be that we're not gentle with ourselves
mm-hmm.
when we need to be.
And yeah.
if it's mental pollution, it might be that we say cruel things to ourselves or we're impatient
yeah.
with ourselves. You know, and
yeah.
if we were a flower, I mean, those things are like the sun and the soil and rain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need all three.
Yes. Yes, we do.
To thrive.
Absolutely. So I'm wondering, when you're coaching with someone, because you offer individual coaching, yeah. is this the type of conversation or support that you lend to folks? Or is it of a different nature?
That's a good question, because it feels like it moves around a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of intuitive listening. So I listen to a person before I really say anything.
Yeah.
Because then something in me gets stimulated and then I can respond. And it's kind of like two ecosystems coming together.
Yeah.
You know, and then they get influenced. But when I work with people, it's often for quite a long time, it turns out. You know, mm-hmm. and only maybe once a week, just for an hour, on Skype, for instance. Mm-hmm. People that, you know, they're not necessarily local. And depending on what their needs are, we just kind of do creative exercises. I get them to do creative exercises. They get homework, you know, but it's fun homework.
Yeah.
It's about them. And so they might, I'm a huge mind map person, so I'll get them to do mind maps on different questions, and I get them to do the seven stages, which is something that's on one of my websites, the seven stages of self-transformation, which is actually something I get the students to do at the universities too.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it's really a process of figuring out what the need is.
Yeah.
Like, is there a place a person is trying to get to? And then digging with them in that garden to find out, well, what else is in the soil here that might be interfering with that impulse to be more free?
Yeah.
So we really look for truth. We just look for truth.
Mm-hmm.
I've been developing this theory of consciousness, a map, if you will, from all the work that I've done, both at the university and with individual clients, because I'm very concerned, like so many of us, about our lack of connection and the resulting behaviors that show up as societies, you know, both through business practice and also just interpersonal communication, you know.
Yeah.
It can be alienating. And so, you know, one of the things is learning about the different ways that we know. And there are lots of intelligences that there's sort of in academia, there's psychology, there's a lot of awareness around, you know, we have rational intelligence and we have motivational intelligence. And it's all quite left brain.
Yes.
Even still. And so because of that, you know, I've been looking at it and I've sort of summarized it into three main areas that everything else fits into.
Mm-hmm.
And that is rational. So we have a rational mind and then it's emotional and then it's sensory. So res, R-E-S.
Mm.
And fourth, I love it because it's short for resonance.
Yes. Oh.
So that's going to be the shift, because now I have developed this model. I hope the book will be out this year.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully by maybe June.
Uh-huh.
Even in an e version. I don't, you know, that, because there are lots of really handy diagrams.
Yeah.
And they show how the energy of us interacting with each other and what's actually happening.
Mm.
It's not always evident, you know, so
right.
how to read the body signals and then how to see them on a diagram. It's like, oh, that's what's happening. And no wonder, you know, and the fact that there's an inner space and then there's an outer space. So there's inner res and outer res. And
yeah,
and certain people should be invited by you only to be in your inner res.
Mm-hmm.
Those are people that you've learned to trust over time. Those are your intimate relationships.
Right.
But otherwise, it's just you. You know, you have the right to just be only you in that space. That's like your bedroom, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then there's the marketplace, and that's the outer res. And that's where you go shopping, and that's where you talk to the bus conductor,
or a
stranger walking their dog, or in your professional life. That's where you meet, and that's where the creative stuff happens.
Yeah.
So this is what I've been discovering through writing, is that the thing for me to be teaching next is this idea of personal energetic space.
Mm.
And singing, the way music plays into that, is still relevant, because when you sing, you clear other people out of your system. It's really efficient. And so it's a wonderful way to both lift your mood, but also reclaim your territory all in one go.
Yes. I've heard that before. I didn't hear it in those words, clearing others from your system, but I have just went to and listened to people talking about singing and how it clears your space.
Yeah.
It's a way of purifying, and the person that I was talking with when I was listening to her workshop, she talked about that's why when you go into different churches and different holy places that they're singing. That's one of the first things that you do.
Yes,
is you sing. Yes. You sing in order to purify the space, purify yourself and the space through the vibrations. Song.
Now, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was a conscious choice. I always thought of singing in churches as being more to activate the experience of community and of course of worship.
Mm-hmm.
Worshipping a deity.
Yeah. And I don't think it's an or, I think it's an and.
Okay.
I think it's an and.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes, yes. And you know, whether it's something that is conscious or not, it's, you know, it's done, and that's something that's happening.
Yes.
So I don't know if it's purposefully someone thought about this, but it's just, she was kind of bringing up, do you ever notice? And it's because singing does this. And so therefore it's one of those innate things I think we have inside of ourselves. So I was wondering, and I don't know if you do, and you mentioned you were getting over a cold.
Yes.
But I don't know if there were there any sounds that wanted to come? Did you bring any of your instruments that wanted to be a part of our conversation?
Yeah, that would be really fun to do. So, yes, I may, we'll see how my voice does, because as you said, I have had that cold that's been going around, at least in California. I don't know.
Yes. Oh, yes, it's going around here. I think it's going around United States wide.
Aha. Interesting. Well, then let me do this. Why don't I do some singing for healing all of our colds around the country?
Yes.
Let's do that. Let's see.
Yes, please.
We can get some help. So the instrument that you're about to hear is called a shruti. This is the shruti. And it's lovely. It's a wooden instrument. And I think you can probably see pictures of it on my website. Not sure.
Mm-hmm.
There are two websites. There's the website that's just clairehedin.com, and that's more of my performance and music stuff. And then there's dynamicemergence.net, and that doesn't have the music stuff. That's more to do with the creativity and the extraordinary phenomena of us arising. So I'll just go and tune in to some singing then for a minute.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the kind of sound. And it's lovely to just sit in the quiet of that afterwards.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, that was beautiful. And I know the sound may have been in and out, but it was resonant.
When you say the sound may have been in and out, was it distorting?
It was, there were times when it was very loud and then it went a little bit distorted in and then it would come back.
Interesting.
And then it would go back and then it would go out and then it would come back. So yes, and I always find that everything is perfect. And so that was how the sound wanted to come through.
Okay, good. Okay.
So yeah, it was very interesting. It was like a pulse. It was like a slow pulse, because and there was a rhythm of this in, and then it would fade out, and then come back in, and then it would fade out. So yes.
Got it. Okay, good. Yeah, and then, you know, people can hear similar types of sounds also that are recorded, so there is a continuity.
Yeah.
On the ClaireHedin.com website. So
yes, and I encourage people to go there. I know I was there. I've been there several times. You have a artistic meditation.
Sound art meditations.
Sound art, absolutely beautiful and lovely. You have this visuals, and then you have the sound, and then there are some to purchase. So I will be sure to have all the information on the description of this conversation today. Thank you, Claire.
I can't believe we're done. That was so fast.
It was so wonderful just to connect and to just dialogue and deepen into this, what I would consider this type of folk healing. It is,
nice.
It's
like
rich
that.
And
yeah.
It's another form of healing from our soul.
Yes.
And so I'm so excited and hopeful that it will stimulate those who listen into their truth.
Yes, and there's a gift to help people with that.
Remember,
there's a Shante will post this, but there's a 50% discount on the video series that I did, which has me talking and helping you go through your own mind map process.
Oh, wonderful.
And so I think it's just called Soul Discount, but I did send it, so
yes,
post it.
Yes.
Now, it's not expensive in the first place, but just because I like giving gifts, you know.
Yes, yes.
Off of that, so.
Absolutely, yes. I will definitely have that posted in there
so
people can explore that.
Yeah, do it.
Oh.
It's great.
Wonderful. So say your websites again, even though I'm going to have them in the description. Say both of your websites again.
So the first is my name, which is ClaireHedin.com, ClaireHedin.com,
uh-huh.
And that's all the music stuff. And then there's the creativity site, which is where you'll find workshops and so on, and that and the book, developments of the book, and that is Dynamic Emergence, dynamic.net, dynamicemergence.net.
Wonderful. So
those are two websites.
Awesome. So be sure you read in the description, because I will have those websites and another project that Claire is involved in. And so that information will be there too. And then just connecting with her, talking with her further, reaching out for any of her coaching and supportive offerings, you'll be able to connect with her through those sites as well. So thank you so much again, Claire, for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you, listeners, for just tuning in to Soul Time. I am so grateful that you were here and took the time out. And so I'm wishing all of you a wonderful day and into the week. And I will talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.